Good morning and welcome to Frankly Speaking. Today we'll be discussing pet psychology in part one of our two-part series on pets. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University. Does your pet run under the bed every time it hears the crack of thunder? Or does it crave attention by doing weird things, but when you try to give it attention, the pet shies away? If your pet has these and other peculiarities, don't touch your dial. With me today to discuss pets is Dr. Ginger Hamilton, a noted pet and human psychologist located in Silver Spring, Maryland. Dr. Hamilton, you are a pet psychologist.
Right.
Tell me, how did you get involved in pet psychology?
I would say I got involved or started the practice with my colleague, Dr. Robbins, 10 years ago now. Basically because I felt there was a need not filled in the animal world, which was filled with the human world. If I may make some comparisons, I think I can clarify. If you have a medical problem with a human, you're going to go to a physician. If you have a medical problem with an animal, you're going to go to your veterinarian. If you have a training problem with a human, you're going to go to a teacher or an educator. If you have a training problem with an animal, you go to the obedience instructor. If you have an emotional or developmental problem with humans, you go to your psychologist or your psychiatrist. If you have an emotional or a developmental problem with your animal, there was no place to go because no one was trained to work in this area. And I felt there was a great need to have what I call applied animal psychology. And so I started it.
Now, you have human clients as well as pet clients.
That's right.
Tell me, do animals suffer from neuroses the same as humans?
They suffer from many of the same types of problems that you would see in humans. Not all of them, of course, because the human is a higher cognitive animal. They certainly suffer from phobias. Particularly rainstorm phobias. We get thunderstorm phobias around here. I see animals that are withdrawn. We see that in humans. I see animals that overeat, that stop eating. I see aggressive animals. I mean, most behaviors you're going to talk about in animals, you're certainly going to see in the human animal world.
So a dog can have anorexia, for example?
Yes, I haven't come across a dog with anorexia. I've come across cats that would be suffering from what I would call something akin to that. You get the same behavior. The animal would simply die of starvation. Yes.
Can a pet acquire his owner's neuroticisms?
Oh, yes. The pet certainly can. I don't say that this is common. This would be rare. But I just spoke of thunderstorm phobias. And that's a difficult case to work with because there certainly is no one reason why the animal's phobic. It can be any number of reasons. But one thing I have to determine is how the human or the owner responds to a thunderstorm. Because if they're nervous and upset, the animal certainly will pick this up. The animal does pick up a conflict within a family. I'll find people coming to me when they have just gotten a divorce or they're in the midst of getting a divorce. There's a lot of conflict going on. When they have a child, it's causing them problems. The animal will start acting up. Yes, they certainly do pick up on the behaviors going on within their environment.
So when you see a pet, you also see the owner at the
always,
same time?
Always. In fact, since I see people only one time, I call it pack therapy, I demand that the entire family be present or I won't see them. If a husband calls me from the corner phone booth and says, hey, I want to see you, but I don't want my wife to know, I'll say, I'm sorry, I won't see you. I must see husband, wife, children, all the animals that may be involved, sometimes a next-door neighbor, mother-in-law, obedience instructor, veterinarian. Sometimes I can have a very large office, which is really filled with people.
What about the owner adapting some of the pet's neuroticisms? Have you?
I haven't experienced that. It's an interesting question. It's something I've never thought about before. Owners will, let's turn that around a little bit. Owners, I'm finding, will take animals as their pets that they perceive as having certain personality types. For instance, and my data are beginning to bear this out, if you have a very assertive, we used to call these people aggressive, but we wanted to separate them from the animal behavior, so we call them highly assertive people. And I don't mean neurotically assertive. I would be, for instance, classified, I would classify myself as a very assertive person. But these people, highly assertive people, have a tendency to, well, I'll find more aggressive animals with the very assertive person than I will with other types of people, for instance.
Now, what kinds of animals, what breeds of dogs or cats are you speaking of?
Of course, I see aggression throughout all kinds of animals. But there are certain breeds, unfortunately, that people have the idea they're aggressive. A Doberman, for instance. German Shepherd, for instance. Now, most of the Dobermans I see in my office just want to be big lap dogs. But you will find them selecting. The very aggressive or assertive person is going to be more likely to select the larger working breed animal.
Do pets really have mental problems, or are they misjudged because of a lack of understanding of animal behavior instincts on the part of the owners?
I'd have to say both. It depends on how you define mental problems. Yes, they have emotional problems. I find in a few instances that indeed a problem does not exist. It's the owner that does not know what kind of behavior would be expected. Let me give you a for instance. I had a client come to me who was very, very concerned about her male dog, which she found urinating in the house. And to make a long story short, she had always owned female dogs. Well, when females go out and eliminate, it's very quick, you know, and it's usually once and maybe twice. When a dog goes out to eliminate, it's every tree on the block until they're finished. She wasn't accustomed to that, so she was letting her dog go out, use a tree, and bring it right back in. Well, the dog wasn't finished, so it completed a necessary act in the house. This is where understanding of the animal was lacking. Once the understanding came about, the problem was pretty readily taken care of.
What about pet needs?
I'm glad you asked that. They need to be animals. Dogs need to be dogs. They need to eat properly prepared bones, for instance, to chew with their teeth and not have soft diets constantly. They don't have a need for painted fingernails and ribbons in their hair. They have a need to act like animals. They need companion animals. As much as I get upset at bathing my huge animals, I know they need to get out and romp and get muddy, because that's an animal, that's a dog need. Cats now. People have the idea that cats need to get out and roam the wide open spaces. That's really not true. A cat does very well within the confines of your house, as long as you don't pack it with cats. They have a need for individual space. But animal needs are usually neglected. The pet is brought in to fulfill the owner's needs, with too often a neglecting of what the pet's needs are. For companionship, for dog and cat food, not human food. They have different nutritional needs. For exercise, humans need that too, but they neglect themselves in that area. And they also need a bathroom. I ask my clients at times, would you like someone to lock your bathroom on you for 10 hours a day? And I haven't had one person say yes. Yet they will expect a dog to withhold for 10 and 12 hours around here. I think that's cruel and unusual punishment.
What determines an animal's personality?
Same thing that determines your personality or my personality: genetics and environment.
What's the best way for disciplining a pet?
Depends on the pet. I can tell you some ways to not discipline. Easier than I could tell you the best way to discipline, just like it would be a child. They require different methods. One thing, if you own a terrier or any kind of mixed terrier, you don't hit the terrier for discipline, because terriers are bred to be very assertive animals. You simply don't hit a terrier because you're modeling aggressive behavior. The best way to discipline is provide some consistency in the environment. Let the animal know what you expect, where you expect it, when you expect certain behavior. How would you feel if you never knew what your boss was going to tell you from one day to the next? If you didn't have this kind of limit set on you, you must know what behavior is expected. Same is true for a dog. If you want to secure dog or cat, you must set limits.
What do you tell an owner of a cat or dog who attacks guests in the home?
Stop the behavior unless they want to lose their guests. Now, how to stop the behavior is a totally different problem. It might be that the animal's just undisciplined all the way around. They have never taught the animal not to jump up on them or anyone else. So you might have to start back with a very basic obedience instruction. It depends on what the animal's like and what the owners are willing to do. I also have to determine if owners really want to stop the animal or if they're getting some sort of secondary gratification out of the animals attacking people or jumping all over them when they come in.
What advice would you give a pet owner whose cat sprays urine in places other than the litter box? The pillow, for example.
Yeah. Or someone's face. Yeah, that happens too. You'd first have to determine, is it really spray? A lot of people talk about any kind of urination outside the litter pan as spraying, and that isn't true. Spray has a very definite odor. It's a fatty substance that can be mixed in with the urine. Spraying can occur whether an animal's been neutered or not. A spayed female can spray. When spraying occurs, it is usually as a result of some stress in the household. Typically, it's not spray. It's simply the animals urinating outside the litter pan. And that can come from any number of reasons. People buy covered litter pans. I'd like to throw those out totally because it really locks the odor in. Green litter, that'll drive cats right out of the litter pan very quickly. Not cleaning the litter pan adequately is a big problem. Cats need to have clean litter.
One last question. Many people work during the day, and pets sometimes spend long periods of time being alone. What would you recommend to keep the pet well adjusted?
That's a very common problem in this area, by the way. Adequate companionship, then, is one thing. Do not lock the animals up. Let them have as much freedom as you can within the household, gradually. Exercise. Definitely animals need exercise, particularly if you have a sporting breed animal. You better be prepared to give that animal a good half an hour to 45 minutes of a good run in the mornings before you leave for work. Let them be animals. Adequate food, of course, which would mean hard food for their teeth. Of course, proper medical care is always a must. I think those are basically, clean, make sure their environment is clean, make sure they have good social exposure. That's very important. They must be exposed to people and other animals off their own territory because you have a high correlation between aggression and confinement. I think you're going to have a fairly well-adjusted animal if you can supply all of those things. And if you can't, you shouldn't have the pet to begin with.
Next week, we will discuss part two of our program on pets and their interaction with humans. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Jean Hyde. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.